Welcome everyone to MoMA. Today is the first of our three open house tours, and we're going to be visiting a house with the architects who are here with us today. We're very delighted to have Jeremy Edmiston and Douglas Gauthier. And so they are going to take us around for the next hour. So we're going to go outside to the 54th Street lot, and you'll be able to ask questions. We'll have a nice discussion. And I just wanted to give you a brief background on both of the architects before we get started. Jeremy is originally from Australia and has been practicing, teaching, and researching architecture in New York for 16 years. His practice is based in reevaluating the relationship between the built and natural environment in all of the permutations. And Douglas... Hi. Douglas is a New York-based architect whose work focuses on the structural, programmatic, and environmental parameters that influence architecture. So they'll be talking to you a little bit more about what that all means. As we get started. So thanks for coming, and thanks to you for doing this.
So we're thanks first for having on us. The list. This is great.
Have you all seen the show upstairs?
Yes.
And you kind of understand, because I think in some ways it's really important to understand in the lot that these five structures are kind of five arguments. Or five positions, or five ways of looking at grieving. It isn't like, I think they're all fairly iconic pieces of architecture, but I think it's understanding that the argument is all going back into the stuff that's upstairs, right? So in some ways, I think these five houses are, in some ways, saying familiar things about prefab, and hopefully saying some new things about prefab.
The show is One of the things that Barry talked about, Barry, the curator of the show, talked about, was that the show is actually not about prefab. It's about fabrication. And the houses are a great way to talk about how things are made. And, there's a lot of discussion at the moment. There are a lot of new fabrication techniques. There's a lot of discussion about sort of digital techniques in architecture, design, and fabrication that get played out on the lot and in the show. So when we look at our piece, you are seeing a house, but it's also the idea for us is not only a house, but it's a way of building, a way of putting things together. A way that design or architecture can be performed, in this case for the public, right? But not only for the domestic environment of the house, but for other sort of buildings and structures as well. Should we go over to the lot? It's sort
really
of noisy in here.
It might be a good idea to.
Cleaning it while we wait.
Is actually being built for people at the present time.
Well, how more actual could it be?
No, have private parties bought the house.
Well, there's one in Australia. No. I mean, no one's. You want to buy one?
Yeah.
For sale.
That's what I meant.
Absolutely.
Monday discount.
No, there's no discount. It's in the museum. It costs what it costs. I mean, that's the issue. The prefab. Our whole thing is that it's more fab than pre, but the idea is that it's based on three basic parameters: the structural parameters, which you see in the ribs; the programmatic parameters, which would be the massing or the overall shape. Right? If you were an artist with 12 kids, you would have a very different shape than if you were a couple with two children and four dogs. Right, so the massing and the arrangement of rooms, and would be the second thing, and then the third thing are all the environmental issues of how the wind goes through it, how the sound goes through it, how the heat goes through it, and how it interacts with the sunlight and the views and the orientation towards its street or its nature. So we would take a view that this is as much nature as a beach. right? If 54th is a natural condition, you may argue against that, but I would say not. We would say not. So those three things shape, structure, and operate the house. So what happens if you're interested in building one, you provide a site, you provide a program, and then the other issues. And you can say, well, you know, in the dining room, I really, really need a 27-foot tall ceiling. It's just important that I have that Calder hanging in my dining room. And so therefore, your environmental issues might become secondary in your dining room. So do you make up for it in your sleeping area, or do you make up for it in the overall? So all of a sudden, we're not negotiating about, oh, I want Texas Tudor, or I want something that I've seen before. It's, I want something that works according to the way I live and where I live. So that's what we're offering up, in a way.
Yeah, I don't think any of the houses on the lot make any pretense for being really cheap, you know, houses. You know, I think part of the argument for the fabrication is being able to get these sort of larger ideas into a domestic package. You know, many typically the sort of domestic house sort of ends up being the way it is for, you know, historic reasons or cost reasons or whatever. But the thinking that all of the architects have had about what the house should be, often that thinking comes from more institutional spaces or commercial spaces or different kinds of finishes. The sort of prefab nature of the show is about being able to package those ideas into a domestic environment. And so the idea of sort of multiples or customization or deployment of the product, you know, has to do with solving sort of other problems than, you know, necessarily sort of the cost issues involved.
I think we would also say that if let's say the 20th century is designed, is earmarked by sort of mechanistic thinking, right? The machine or the factory, things are delivered, there's an assembly line, there's sort of the Fordist, Taylorist principles that we're all familiar with from General Motors and the like, is that the digital actually allows us to change that. We're allowed to measure things in smaller pieces. We're allowed to measure the molecular structure of heat. We're allowed to measure the members that put this thing together in more complex form, right? So it isn't, it's that there are, you know, 400 sheets of plywood all with different pieces cut out of them. It's actually something quite doable and is actually controllable. So that we're actually able to measure things more. And all of a sudden, we're more aligned in an organic structure. We would argue that this house, it isn't necessarily organic in its language, right? Organic always seems to be flowers or oozy or curly or something like that. But that it's organic in its relationship to the way it measures things. And so by measuring things on a more intimate level, we're actually able to subtly decide. It isn't that the rooms sort of start to negotiate with one another rather than bump up against one another or are pre-made and then fastened together like a kit of parts. It's a kit of parts where we actually make all the parts. So I think that becomes another way of thinking of it, and returns it to sort of that position about what is nature, what is the natural, what is the synthetic, and how are we maneuvering in that.
The first one of these was is built in Australia. It's about 4 hours north of Sydney on the coast. It's not at the beach, but it's close to the beach. It's in the sort of beach climate zone. And it's the site is in a floodplain. So the house is actually off the ground to avoid the 100-year floodplain that rises up to about a meter. So we wanted to make the first space of the house the underside, the undercroft, right? So we lifted it up a little bit further so that the space underneath could become useful. So this is the first approach to the house. If you look at either end of the house, you can see that the the shape is different at either end. And these were the two shapes, the two definitive ideas that we had about measuring those spaces, the way Douglas was talking about that sort of fine measurement of what should the living room be, what should the bedroom be, how should those rooms, what should be the outlook of those rooms, what are the views from them, what is the cross ventilation through those rooms. And we came up with these two sort of almost extreme points. If the house went beyond those shapes, the space would no longer really work. But anywhere between those ideas is the sort of acceptable range of what we wanted the sort of interior spaces to be. So you can see that the shape is really a joining of those two ideas. The geometry of the form is all about connecting this end shape with that end shape. So the space inside or between those points we talk about that space as a negotiation, right? So rather than talking about a square space or a triangular space or a round space, we talk about this kind of negotiated space, right? Where maybe it's the living room, maybe it's the dining room, somewhere it's in between, maybe it's shelter, maybe it's holding you in, maybe it's throwing you out, it's somewhere in between those two sort of spatial ideas. You know, maybe you can see the moon, maybe the moon is cut off, you know, at night from that space. And the part of the dimensional accuracy of the project came about from the cross ventilation or the breezes that were very crucial, very important to that sort of specific site. In the afternoon, you almost, in summer, you almost set your watch by the breezes that change direction and come off the sea. And so those cooling breezes are captured by the orientation of the windows, the slits, the gashes, the louvers.
Excuse me, this is so disturbing. Can we move over to the other side of the house?
Sure. The question is, let's move away from the street. why don't we go under the house and we can look at the structure, and then we'll go up and in. How's that?
Where Australia is situated, they see the water outside.
You can't see the water at all. You can hear it because it comes with the breezes.
Can you consider the front, not a back?
This is where the street is. Exactly the like this. The back garden is the Moma lot where the kids play. And the street is, this is along the street. So this is east and that's west, and the sun follows the direction. Yeah.
Yeah, that was part of working with the museum was when the exhibition team first put it together, they put it together according to the size. You know, and they said, well, the big one here, the little one here, and the medium ones in between. And that's fine in some level, but we sat them down with a little folded model and said, you know, it's really important that this house faces south. Even it's different than Australia, but it's not brand new, because we also considered making it all brand new for this site. But they wanted to keep it in the range of the familiar. So all right, but we then need to orient it in a similar fashion. So we are oriented south, and so you do get, it's too bad it's not sunny today, because about 2 o'clock is when you get this incredible shadow. So you get the chunk of the house, the chunk of the shadow, and then the chunk of green that we put under it. Because what's funny is how few people go under the house.
Yeah.
It's actually a very, very nice. We don't understand why they always set up a bar or when they have a grill outside of the house. It's actually underneath there would be protected, and you never have to get an umbrella. But it also protects you a little bit from the sun. Like, it's probably 5 or 10 degrees less than the sun on a hot day, and you see the same thing in the house as you go in deep. The insulation and the orientation and the shading provided by the overhangs make it a little bit cooler than the rest of the site, actually. But this is our favorite area. Well, among his always favorites, I guess. But but you can see underneath here, if you back away, you can start to see where it breaks down. We see outside here we see a vent that's releasing air that's flowing through the house. And then you see another set of vents in the interstitial. And these vents aren't closable. They're all open for the exhibition now. And actually there's a lot of venting going. There's probably more venting than you would in the normal house for the exhibition, because we pulled some pieces up for seating and gestures towards the domestic of beds and such.
The house we built, all the vents are louvered, so they're all adjustable. So from the inside, yeah.
Australia?
Yeah.
Canada. It's good.
It's a great country.
So you start to see under here, you start to see the structure, right? That Douglas was talking about, that sort of the system of holding the building together. And each one of these pieces is plywood that is cut from a machine that uses digital files. So each one of these pieces is a different shape, slightly different shape, because the form of the house is slowly twisting. Each piece is numbered. Each piece is pre-drilled for the bolts to come. So they come sort of already sort of ready to be put together, ready to be assembled. And with the structure, we were looking for a system that could accommodate change, right? Change in the sense that the form is always changing, but also change in the sense that the rhythm of the structure can vary. Sometimes it can be very tight, sometimes it can be very loose. So you see that through as you're going through the house. It's most obvious underneath here because all of the structure is exposed. But as we go up into the house, you'll see other areas where the structure is not exposed at all or a little bit partially exposed. So this sort of two-way structural rib system, right, becomes the sort of articulation of the form, right, when we're not using the skin.
And how that works, why the house is, I mean, one of the sustainable arguments about the relationship to the sun, the relationship to the breezes, the relationship to the insulation, but how it works is that it's actually a tension system. Like, it's a kite, all right? It's like the skin on the outside is actually, the ribs, when they're open, they're actually quite loose. They don't tighten up. But as every layer of skin goes on them, the floor, the interior walls, the back wall, the roof, and the side walls, it tightens up and slowly becomes self-organized. And that allows it to be a very, very taut, strong, light system. And in some ways, just the pure lightness of the house, that it touches the ground lightly, that it's not a great deal of weight or use or material, is part of the overall, it's in some ways, some of the most powerful part of the sustainability argument, that just building lighter allows you to build more, and then the house, the ingredients are steel, glass, plywood, and a few chemicals. And most of those things are actually renewable resources.
Yeah, most of them. And because the house is so... Because the house is all drawn out, like every piece, you know, almost every bolt hole is drawn, right? Before any material is even ordered, we have an incredible amount of information about what the house is. And one of those pieces of information allows us to reduce the waste by a huge amount from the sort of construction process. So, you know, each one of these pieces of plywood can be arranged on a typical plywood sheet to reduce, right, the waste of the project. You know, you can order the bolts with, you know, literally like a 2% overage, right? So there's this ideal, or this kind of dream that by producing architectural construction this way, it becomes incredibly sort of efficient in terms of the materials that actually end up on site, you know, producing the work. Because there's a tremendous amount of waste, you know, typically in the construction sort of industry. Should we go upstairs?
Yeah, maybe we should. So the house, the programming of the house,
Like there's this is the undercroft where you can park your car, you can put a pool, you can have. So this is the underbelly of it. It's a protected, actually another area that can be occupied. And then the house is sort of like these three bands as we go through it. There's the deck bleacher band. There's a living, eating, you know, living, dining, kitchen band, and then there's a sleeping band with a sort of structural, a knot, we call it the bow tie, of the closets turning each way, sometimes turning into a living area, sometimes turning into a sleeping area as it goes through. And those help you understand it, and it's also coded in the way you perceive the structure. So here you see the full depth of the rooms in the more formal area of the eating dining area. The ribs are all at a 2-inch exposure, and then in the sleeping area, that's all returned to the facet of the exterior. So that just helps you know where you are and how it's talking to you.
How deep do you have to go with the stilts?
I'm sorry?
How deep do you have to go with the stilts?
I think these just go down about 18 inches, 2 feet.
Yeah, these are quite shallow.
But in Australia?
In Australia, we went down even less, I think.
Yeah. It's true.
why did you add the layer on the top, on the bottom of the blind? Is that the insulation purpose? Or
yeah.
Is that insulation? But is that couldn't be on top of the beams? Or have to be like between?
Well, we actually used that to position the ribs. The ribs came flat to side. There's a movie upstairs, and they were expanded, and the insulation was routed out so that it locked in the location of the ribs.
But it's a space between, so it cannot be like completely between beams. But you know what I mean. It's not entirely.
When you see it upstairs, you'll see.
So this is the first sort of bar, or the first strip, that Douglas talked about. This is the outdoor, obviously the outdoor sort of area, or part of the house. There's the deck with the bench that looks back right at the house that sort of holds you in on the deck. The little alcove here is where the original owner of the house wanted to set up a giant barbecue. So this was like his domain. For the party, and then the bleachers that take you back down, you know, to the ground, were a device to sort of articulate the activities that you could do, you know, with the outside of the house, right? So these are the bleachers here, right? These steps, yeah. This guardrail doesn't.
This part of railing was added for exhibition because it's not
that easy.
This is quite a ambitious vertical.
This is where the family sits and, you know, drinks and shouts at the kids who are playing the games in the back garden. So the original house was oriented facing the sun, but also facing a large, narrow back garden, you know, that came with the house where, you know, all the kids played. So the bleachers really take you from this level, you know, above the floodplain, back down into the garden, and it becomes a sort of an activity in itself, right? So rather than having just this extensive sort of deck, which, you know, is sort of almost a kind of a no man's land. Each piece is sort of articulated with an idea or an activity implied in the arrangement of the house.
This is the barbecue tent. And you can see where you could put a lot. In an ideal world, you'd have a table that's on wheels, so you roll it out of these double doors that lead sometimes on the deck, or you sometimes would be along the bench. So you see the sort of the coating of that bench is the dining area. This long counter in front and back is the kitchen area, and then the rest of the to the left is the living area, where we sort of lifted up a little bench area, just pulled it up out of the floor. So people can sit down, people can do it. So there's a certain amount of negotiations for exhibition. And I think one of the biggest things about the exhibition, and Jeremy started talking about it with Louis, is how it's delivered. And you see in the boards, well, it was actually, we call it the burst house, partially because of the super gravity.
There's a movie in one of the rooms back here that you can watch that sort of shows how it was pulled apart. But you know, one of the problems one of the challenges with the show was how to build the house with 4,000 different plywood pieces in 6 weeks in Midtown. And one of the things that the museum gave us was the use of a crane. So, we had to think of a way that crane could be useful, right, for, all these plywood, sort of pieces. So they were sort of assembled, the structure was pre-assembled in a warehouse space in Gowanus, and then brought, overnight on these huge trucks for the crane to lift it up, and you'll see those images in the back room.
So it's the idea of reducing the number of pieces from 4,000 to maybe 400?
More or less.
Yes. that was part of the delivery. I mean, in some ways, the delivery... And one of the things when we were studying the prefab or the history of these types of houses is that the delivery system is what differentiates them from the norm. So the home delivery name is also quite well chosen, and I think that's part of the thing. Part of the thing when one goes through the house is to actually look at the proposals from Thomas Edison to Buckminster Fuller to Frank Lloyd Wright about these delivery methodologies, because I think in some ways that's what, I don't know if we would call the prefab article, the fabrication allows us to deliver it in more, to deliver more things more completely. And I think that's the goal. And I think as the method evolves, that will keep becoming more and more, in some ways, trim, right? And that's the relationship of the factory to the site is always a little bit unstable, but we can push it, depending upon the site, depending upon the factory accessibility, we can push it in either direction, the same way the house can be pushed in either direction, formally or structurally.
Well, one of the huge part components of, building a house, of course, is the labor. And, how labor is sort of organized within the sort of construction, so industry and within your particular site is one of the major issues that prefab sort of takes on, right? Because that part of the delivery operation, right, talks a lot about, how you use the labor that you are able to get on site. And our sort of position is that the sort of the form or the technology is limited or is kept in the factory, right? And so the labor on site doesn't, you're not relying on highly skilled labor on site. You know, you're putting these pieces together that are already measured, they're already cut, they're already very accurate, right? So you're sort of taking away the need to have incredibly precise sort of carpentry, right, on, you know, wherever your site, you know, might be. Should we go inside?
Excuse me, but are they made out of material which are fireproof?
This plywood is fire retardant. So it's what do they call it? Class A fire resistant plywood.
Because you know it's not very flimsy. I mean, if it would start flaming, it could really.
Well, your bushfires in Australia, in the part of Australia where we built this, is a very, you know, prevalent, and it's a very big issue for domestic architecture because, you know, everybody wants to live in nature, right? In the wilderness, they have these fantastic sites, but, you know, they're in the way of bushfires.
You're looking at the wrong person because I just love Manhattan. I like the heat of it. But, you know, some people like nature. It's true. Nature is beautiful.
So, you know, I mean, the some friends, you know, in Australia, well, one of the technologies is that seems to work very well is to sort of douse the house with water, you know, because it makes a lot of sense to build these kind of lightweight wood sort of structures. But there's a rule now, you know, in Australia where you have to maintain this huge tank of water on site specifically for firefighting. And what happens is during a bushfire or, you know, a potential bushfire, that the tank of water is released and basically douses the whole house, so that when, as the fire comes through, the fire takes the path of least resistance and generally skips over the property and keeps going. So that's been a very effective way of fighting fires. What that's what.
Well, it's as fire resistant as any suburban house. Okay, it's not as fire resistant as any New York structure. It's actually not classified as a house. It's classified as an exhibition piece for the museum. Because you can't build with wood in New York.
Oh, but I'm not thinking about New York.
I know, but you're bringing up the fire issue. But the fire issue is as safe as any other house. It's not less safe, I guess, as would be my, you know, would be a sort of, you know, there are all these other options for fighting bushfires, but it's also the basic technology is the same as is the same fire resistant as most any suburban house. These four boards actually have a great deal of information in them. The one closest to us is all the pieces. That's every piece as it was broken up for the delivery system, except for the ribs. All the ribs they were all broken up like that. So I haven't counted them, but it's every piece that was in the digital model and in the, we have taken shortcuts where the containers in the front are containing the bolts, so we didn't draw all the bolts. But all the pieces, everything is in that piece. The second piece to our left
square feet
is showing
it's 1,050
variables of how showing variables about how the house could be, how it's explaining, that an upper diagram is explaining the two sections of these two things coming together. It's showing other options of something for Dr. Pepper, where it was a glass one, something for a birdhouse, something for a museum installation, and then something where it's a burst that's actually a six-unit building for a competition in New Orleans. But it's also trying to show all the components, and down at the bottom it's sort of showing some of the variations of how those things might come together in basic massing. And then this blackboard is the structural issue of it. So you see the way the ribs are pulled out of the overall massing, which is at the bottom, and then you see how the skin is wrapped around it. And that creates that sort of kite condition. And then on the left of that is all the pieces, all the sort of recognizable pieces of the moment frame, the flooring system, the ribs, the skins, the interior walls, the glazing, all those pieces coming together. And then the very, very first board is in some ways redundant with the film in the back, because it's showing sort of a graphic of the house being delivered to the museum.
There was a question over here about air conditioning. This house is not air conditioned. It was designed for a very specific a site that had incredibly good cross cooling breezes in the middle of summer. And so what you can see is that this wall of glass has the jalousy adjustment where the wind or the breeze comes through there and exits under the stairs that go up to the next level. When you go into the next level or into the bedrooms at the back, you'll see there's a clear story where the air flows through that and out the horizontal ventilator that's at sort of, I guess, shelf level that's running along the back that Douglas showed when we're on the outside. So these two sort of bands are naturally ventilated. That's not to say, of course, that we haven't thought about air conditioning and heating. We've worked with our engineers, Bureau Havel, so that when whatever site this could go to, we would have a central system. It might operate from geothermal or solar or wind or electricity on the grid, depending on your very specific location. And this center, or the bow tie, right, faces all the spaces, and so you would run the ducting or the heating elements or cooling elements through there, and you could get to all of the spaces quite easily. While we're in this space, what you can see is how the end of this room has a roof form, right, that begins to sort of hold you in, right? It's angled away from the glass wall, right, and so the living room is almost an enclosed sort of space. The other side of this area, you have the dining room, where the roof form is almost pushing you out onto the deck, right? And so that slow sort of negotiation between those two ideas is one of the things where you can see the twisting and the form working or following the sort of programmatic or the spatial relationship of the house.
Yeah,
the
structure is
the
structure is it's lightweight, but it's very, very insulated. All the surfaces have in this house have 4.5 inches of hard insulation. So the floor, the walls, and the roof have a very high R value. Now that could be expanded up to 8-10 inches, right? In terms of insulation thickness, what we did in terms of the sort of the glass was we sort of collected all the glass that we were allowed sort of environmentally for that sort of insulation factor and put it all in one area, right, to get this sort of floor to ceiling glass. The other thing that happens with this house is that it's a very tight structure. There are no sort of air gaps in it. So when everything is closed up, it has very, very few leaks from it, thermal leaks. And so the question is really about how much louvered space you have and how you control the louvers. You can get insulated louvers. You can close that down. So in a Four Seasons climate, that would be more sort of mechanically worked.
If you wanted even more glazing, you over insulate, right? And it's very much a balancing act, and to get that to get that amount, you actually have to insulate quite heavily, and especially the floor. Because if you're up out of the ground, you've got a whole new insulation condition.
What is this?
Stone.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, part of the building. It's simply one of our stone people volunteered these pieces of stone for the house. They installed them, put them on. So the only thing we gave them was make sure they're beige.
Okay.
So I think this is a beige travertine that they liked a lot, and they brought in and they put it in, and so that gives you the this kitchen is quite central. You're looking out. You would have a few series of bar seats against this. And we try to give you the feel of how it would be a house without depending upon furniture. Is part of the reason. I think you may want to. It's tough to get everybody into the rooms at once, but it might be kind of fun. The master bedroom, there's a half bath, there's a full bath, and then there's a larger space that was in the original house was two bedrooms, but we decided to make more of a sort of a gallery space for the video process. But we didn't put any doors or anything in the house for it. Just seemed like it would get in the way of the flow of people going in and out of it. But I think you'll start to see. I think one of the things, the clerestory is very, very beautiful in the inside here, but you don't understand it until you're in the Kieran Timberlake project and can actually see the whole form wrapping around. I think that explains the sort of opening and closing of the facade and the cuts in the form that allow this ventilation to happen. Where should we go now?
So, well, why don't we go to the master bedroom?
Right to left.
Yeah.
We just put them together in Gowanus.
Reduction of pieces.
Well
tenfold.
Well, when you see the film, it'll be obvious,
okay.
Right? Because all of these individual pieces are bolted together with the connectors, right? And it's like a concertina; they're just flattened, right? So there's just three pieces, right, for the structure. It's a hard thing to explain, but you'll see it in the video.
Yeah, it's taking it from many, many little pieces and prefabricating it into chunks that are deliverable.
Right. This is you made a lot of compromises.
I don't know if it's compromises. I think it's actually a better way to
Yeah, it's a development of the building system. So in the master bedroom, you have the clerestory at its largest, and you have the ventilator at its largest, and you have the ceiling at its lowest. So you'll see how these things change, right, as you go through the rooms at the back here. It was closed off, of course, in the original house.
It was actually glazed. These areas that were open were actually light, so the light not only.
It went both ways.
It went both ways. It came through. It also bounced back into
translucent glazing or clear glazing.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Can you close that in any way? I mean, if it's too bright, can you cover that in any way? Not really.
We put this in for the show.
Oh,
this is really only for the show.
Oh.
In the house that we built in Australia, there was no advantage to sort of looking that way. It was a street view. There was nothing to see.
Oh.
This was where the very hostile winds came through. So we really closed the house down on that side.
It's also much stronger sun.
In Midtown, of course, you want to see all of those buildings.
It's also giving it's an in some ways this house is an evolution of the last house. And we think in some ways the possibility of making a
putting a normal window on the folded pieces with the flower graphics and all that. This language actually seemed to fit the house.
Oh, it's lovely.
Of how to lighten it up and brighten it for exhibition, and also to make sure that it wasn't just a graphic. That the flowers actually became operable. They became something else. They became skylight window conditions that actually, I think, I mean, there's a photograph on one of the blogs, like right in this corner. That's one of those beautiful pictures of the house, because it's got this, you see this sort of the complexity of the lines, the ribs, and the form of the flower all coming together. It's in some ways it's a quickie. Those types of things are, you know, there's some things that are overall and very very important to the structure or to the massing or to the environmental issues. Then there are some things that are in some ways lighter or more playful. We think it's a very very serious project, a very very serious house. But it doesn't carry itself with that. It doesn't hit you over the head with that seriousness. It tries to carry itself in a light, playful, engaging way, so that you could see how you would manipulate it for your lifestyle or your family's lifestyle, and so that it actually is trying to open up that discussion to people who would be interested in this type of project.
This in Australia, this had louvers. And so you could, in the winter, it was just shut down, and it was opened up, and just had manual movers. But you know, for the show, it's only up for 3 months, and lots are in summer.
There's another bathroom.
Half bath.
And this is, in some ways, you could see where you're standing over in that corner. You see, there's a little tiny window with a jalousie, so you could see that as a desk. You could actually see working there, or writing there, or working on your computer, and seeing who's coming to visit. Because in some ways, that's the entrance to the house. You would see your friends or your neighbors coming up to the house. So that's kind of there are all these little command points. Like the kitchen is one command point. Maybe that point is a place where you're inside working, but you're still aware of the exterior or the rest of the site.
These rooms at the back are the rooms where, apart from the flowers, you don't see the ribs, right? So you just get the pure shape. Pure interior form, right? So they're smaller rooms, and the architecture quietens down, right? It just becomes very sort of smooth and linear.
You can really feel how cool how the ventilation system works. You can feel it a lot in this room, which is surprising because we're all in this room, but you get all this great breeze over here.
Did she one of your students? Not mine. No, we've noticed it in the opening, you know, because that was what was like a 95 degree day, and it was hot and humid, and everybody was. And so Josh came inside and was like, yeah, not so bad.
Let's go any further than this.
I think we can all stick our heads in the next bedroom. I think we can all gather in the gallery space at the end. Is the hope.
The film
gallery, the theater.
Yeah. If mass producing thousands, what's the target price?
That if we were doing thousands?
Well, obviously, for one house, it has to be expensive.
Right.
But if you had,
it'd be nice to do it for 100,000 if we were doing 1,000.
If you did 1,000, you would hope for a price.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's 100,000, 102,000 material only.
You're doing 1,000 if you're buying.
There would be a drain here.
This whole floor sloped, and there was a drain there.
That's what I'm saying.
So it was a completely kind of wet room, which was really fun.
Reminds me of a room I had in Paris like
20
years ago.
Right.
There was a little room with one of these and a slope.
Well, I think there's a lot of urban ideas, in this house, and I kind of like that. We always like that sort of connection where, you know, it is a holiday house, this is the beach, but that doesn't mean it's devoid of any kind of urban sensibility. Well, you know, we're limited. You know, the budget always limits you, and the most real way it limits you is the size. This is the full bath, as you can see. In the house, we also had a laundry in this room. So it was a laundry bath with a divider between them.
Yeah.
But, and there was a shower.
Okay.
Yeah. So this room was originally two bedrooms. These were the two kids' rooms, if you like. And you can see how the clear story becomes sort of very narrow. You can see how the ventilator shuts down to almost zero, but also the ceiling gets much higher. So you can see how the geometry or the form is changing in this back. But let's finish up by looking at the by taking you through the movie.
I mean, this is the machine that actually. So basically, what we've taken is a three-dimensional model. If we look at the structure, we've taken the actual massing that's the resultant of those two shapes, those two ends coming together, and we assign thicknesses to it. By assigning thicknesses to the walls, the ceilings, the floors, then that gives us the dimension of all the ribs. So then the ribs, I got to go faster.
I know.
The ribs are already cut. Now we're on to the connectors between the ribs, which are these steel pieces made by people who make helicopter blades. They're a very, very precise piece. And so I guess the point here is that it's, in some ways, it's, if you're looking at the history of prefab, we're taking two lineages. We're saying that we are taking the sort of the Loger lineage of the precisely cut wood, but we're also taking the Semper idea of knotting things together, so that this is actually a woven structure. So it's precision cut lumber, which in this case is plywood, with these inventions of connectors, which you see on the outside and on the underbelly, which we call X-clips. So those X-clips allow us to tie the plywood together, because we can't get plywood in 27 by 30 pieces. We get it in 5 by 10 maximum, or 4 by 8 when you're saving money. So then that limit provides the knot to be invented.
Here's our crane. The crane usage. Here are one third. This is one third of the house, or the structure of the house, all connected, pre-painted. And this one piece is coming off the truck and arriving on site. And you'll see how this piece ends up in its final position. You'll see the steel moment frames, the columns and the beams are already in place, ready to accept this shape. Now, you know, because the form is twisting, there isn't any really flat areas except for the floor. So what we did was we notched out flat areas where we have our steel beams underneath, so that the form, which is always changing, can sit, you know, on a flat level datum. And so here we have a third of the structure on the end of a crane being pulled apart.
Like a puppet.
Exactly, like puppet theater.
Yeah.
And the strings are there because the engineers didn't think that, because the roof is much thinner than the floor, so what the rope does is it takes some of the weight and spreads it out over all these little connector pieces, so that you get puppet theater opening up the ribs. And then that was in some ways the best. It happened in two days actually,
yeah.
That all three pieces were opened up and dropped onto the metal. Now that's 3 days and 6 weeks process, but a lot of the timing was actually the finish work or closing things up or all the normal part of any house building. But this was actually quite exciting.
Well, what's great about in our process, what's great about this part of the project is that once this is there, all of the geometry, all of the shape of the house exists. Right on the structure, right. So you know, we really just have to, in some ways, just fill it in. If we can fill everything in, right, then we get the shape of the house. Right, we're not putting this up and then trying to add things to it to get the shape. The shape is sort of embedded in this woven structure. So these crank guys were, you know, fantastic. They're used to working in Midtown. They're also used to working with the museum. They do a lot of the museum work, and in particular the Richard Serra pieces. And so we met with them many times to figure out how this this process could work. And it was, you know, surprisingly easy when it happened.
So is the steel for like girders, or what are the steel?
They're basically normal. They're basically W sections. They're beams that they're moment frames because they resist the movement in one direction, and then the wood resists it in the other direction. So that the knitting together of the steel and the wood, and that the wood is tying down to the ground, gives us a very, very strong system. So that the, and also those steel points allow, if we were on a hill, or we were on, you know, we can actually start to negotiate many different, you know, not everything is as easy as a parking lot.
Okay, so in Australia, though, you didn't have a crane.
Right. Well, the steel was actually, well, we did the plywood structure piece by piece. So we put, instead of having a third of the structure as one piece, we made up a piece that consisted of a small segment of the floor, and then we lifted it up into place. Now, instead of having the steel moment frames, we built a scaffold. And so one of the developments that was great about the MoMA project was that the steel moment frames really became a permanent formwork, right? That doesn't need to go away once it's there.
You see, these are, well, that's the beam across the front on top of the steel facade. But you just prior to that, you saw the diagonal cuts in the structurally insulated panels. So those diagonal cuts are the same geometry as the ribs. So there's, in some ways, they're rubber malleted into place.
And so they help lock in the sort of orientation, the location of the ribs.
So as the ribs tend to, Constantine, they tend to tighten and loosen on their own, depending upon who's pushing or who's pulling. So then as every layer of skin goes in, they register. And then this is the completion of the structure. This steel moment frame connects back down to this steel truss connects back down to
the frame of the glass
below, and so that openness is actually allowed by the steel. Steel gives us a great deal of
the glazing frame is actually a truss that helps hold the house together. So these SIPS panels, they're pre-insulated panels. And our ribs, our structural ribs, were notched out of them. And the walls were notched out of them. And we were able to use the crane again to put these big insulated skin pieces over the structural ribs and sort of lock the ribs and the skin together. So you can see a large roof piece going together. So, you know, I mean, the plywood is sort of very strong in this direction here, but in this direction, you know, it there's a lot of flex. So the SIPS panels go in over the ribs and make the house very rigid in this direction, and the plywood is already making it rigid in this direction. So the two together turn it into a very rigid box.
And you see as it goes onto the back, it's all not. So that's... Yes.
Well, your argument is, of course, the long-term practicality is efficient to build and constructed to get on site. How is this house going to be practically maintained? Especially means painting steel busts. How can I get an average painter to handle a job like that?
Spray gun? Basically,
I mean, some out of edges.
But I think that's part of the negotiation. I mean, that's the difference between an exhibition. What I would suggest is you think about what you would want it to be. Is what it would be. Like, if you're not interested in, resin floors, or you're not interested in plywood walls, well, then what are you? Because the SIP panels can be, they can have metal, they could have stone, they could have plastics, so all of a sudden, that discussion, because I doubt anyone would want a beige, although people in Australia like the beige, but, we like the monotone of it, because then your art your furniture, your place settings are creating the language of the house. And then the beige is servicing the space of the house. So that you actually have something to play off of and negotiate. But I think in a personal house, that would evolve. You know, you can get very, very high-end finished furniture-grade plywood. You know, all that type of stuff can be a very, very different language than this house.
The roofing surface is an incredible sort of industrial product that we found that goes over the plywood sort of very well, very evenly, very smoothly. And in Australia, we got a 25-year guarantee on all of the waterproofing of the house, which, you know, for a sort of relatively inexpensive, lightweight wood structure is, you know, pretty good. But, you know, you're looking at a painted house because we're up for 3 months.
Well, thanks for your questions.
Yeah.
And
thanks for coming
today. We're really excited.